everyone, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. You're here with Eric and my sister Tracy. Hey, Trace.
Hey, good morning, everyone. How are you?
Garden Fork is usually a podcast about DIY, eclectic DIY is what I call it. Cooking, gardening, homesteading stuff, fixing stuff, building stuff. But today, we're going to talk about how to take care of your parents and deal with their finances.
Ooh, what riveting subject we have chosen.
Tracy was on a while ago, and we talked about kind of how we realized our parents were in quite a bit of trouble, to the point where the social worker came and said, your parents cannot be left alone anymore. And so we did a previous podcast about that, and it's been a while. And our father has passed away, and our mom is in a skilled nursing facility now. And we thought we'd kind of talk a little bit about some other stuff we learned, because when you're faced with it, especially Tracy, you had this did this crash course in senior care, and I
yes.
I helped with what I could, but you were kind of the lead on it all. So if you're all listening and you have parents that are aging, maybe you could take, you know, like kind of like learning from Garden Fork, you could learn from us about what we had to do with our parents. So
yes,
there you go.
Sooner rather than later is always better.
The plus side is there were some nightmares that went on, but we were, first, I was incredibly lucky because Tracy, you really took the steering wheel on this. And it worked out really well. Dad was in a place that he was safe, and mom now is in a place where she is safe and cared after, and she's happy there. We sold their house. We emptied the house of its contents, and we had to deal with a couple of scary things along the way. So
yes.
You want to start with, so we've got dad in a memory unit and help from the VA.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we moved mom into a skilled nursing facility. And I don't know if we talked about that, but what worked really well with that is that mom had to go into a rehab facility.
Right.
Because she just couldn't be left alone. I don't want to go into the health issues of what she had or has, but it was kind of easy for us to move her into a skilled nursing facility, which is not a full-blown nursing home.
Right.
So we have to pay for it. Medicare does not pay for that. But it was, instead of taking her back to the house, we took her to the skilled nursing facility and said, here you are.
Yeah, and then she went right into assisted living.
Yeah.
Which is, there's like many levels of care for a parent or an older person. So she's in assisted living, which is meals, laundry, and some general assistance to her. And there's emergency pulls, and there's great help with her medication. Because my goal and with my brothers was that mom needs to be safe and she needs to be healthy. If she can be happy too, yay! But, you know, mostly I just wanted her safe and healthy, and she couldn't do that back at the house.
And what we were running into is we would call them and say, did you take your pills? And they'd both say, oh, yeah. And they didn't. And they had this little pill box that would open up and beep. You know, we spent all this money on this stuff, and we just realized, the social worker kind of nudged us and said they just can't be in their home anymore. And we were like, oh, okay.
Right. And our transition was because mom went into a little medical crisis. She never went back to the house. So it wasn't like I moved her right from her home into assisted living. I think that's probably a hard situation. And I mean, not ours was pretty darn bumpy, but in a way it just was so clear that, you know, going back to the house was not an option. And dad had to have memory care. So that was, we kind of scooted him around the same time, and he was in the process of getting Medicaid at that time. And I would recommend that if you're going to do Medicaid, that you find an attorney or a Medicaid consultant to help you through that incredible process.
And he was brilliant. The guy you used was amazing.
Yes. And once you are through with that, you will have an entire file folder built and you're ready for anything.
Which is 3 inches thick.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. I have a whole parental file here.
But even if your parents are well right now, you could kind of go, hey, where's the will? Where's the title to the car?
Right.
You know, stuff like that we had to search for, like your marriage, Medicare needed the marriage certificate, the original.
The original.
Or yes. I got a certified copy of it. I would because I live in New York City, I just went down to City Hall and got it, and it was really kind of fun. But
I'm so glad you enjoyed that.
We've got both mom and dad safe, and then we have to deal with their house, which was a large 4-bedroom ranch home, and it's full of furniture. It's full of their stuff. When my dad, later in life, he started to divest himself of basement stuff, which was kind of nice for us. He emptied out the basement over a couple of years, save for about 100 socket sets that he bought from Harbor Freight Tools, which he had on the ping pong table all organized. Yes,
but sorting them is something his mind could do.
Yeah, so that was fine. So we, Tracy knew a realtor through church. And, I didn't know anyone in that area, and we met with her and had a really good feel for her. And that was really kind of key, was to hook up with her, because she has dealt with selling, parents' homes before. So do you have any thoughts on that, Trace?
Well, she also gave me tips on how to start emptying the house. She said things, you know, that people don't always want to, you know, look at an old person's house. So you do need to empty it out. And it was clear that our parents wouldn't be residing there. So that we got in touch with an estate agent who, is very interesting. Be prepared that you are suddenly in charge of your parents' entire belongings at times. And since I had power of attorney, it was, you know, challenging to make that decision to sort of sign these papers for the estate sale. But you know what they did? That person, the estate sale person, saved us, me, like 10 days of vacation, Eric from flying to, you know, his place over here to the Midwest
to have these garage sales to sell all the stuff
empty and renting dumpsters. It is worth it, whatever you do.
So what the estate sale person does, and then you can find them through the realtor you're using will probably know them because they all work in the same world. They come in, they walk through the house, and they're kind of brutal about it, but they're like, all right, we'll give you this much money for the contents of the house, and we will deliver you a broom clean house. And they offer a percentage of the sale. It just depends on what's in there.
They have a lot of different models they work with and a different time frames they work with. So, interview until you find someone you're comfortable with, but your realtor should know somebody, and it is it doesn't have to be awful, but I think a lot of this, Eric, that we're talking about depends on your siblings. So the more conversations you can have earlier, the better. I had a close friend whose mother passed, and she and her sisters had to work through the estate sale. And, you know, their estates sold things to members of the family. Now, we didn't choose to go that route. but it's just, you know, kind of, if you can, get together over, you know, a meal or something and talk through out loud, you know, well, I'd like this or I'd like that, or it doesn't matter to me. I mean, I have my dad's cast iron fry pan and I have my grandmother's rolling pin, and that's pretty much it. I'm good. You know, have those conversations about the possessions.
Yes.
And the other part is the conversations about the roles that each of you are going to take.
And we did Skype calls, or we did conference calls on the phone, and it worked out really well.
Oh, yeah, we did. We did.
And because go ahead.
Oh, if you have a person who's not in the same geography, like one of your siblings is not there, they still could do a lot, because I would just, you know, get in touch with Eric and say, I need you to take this over. And he could do it on the phone or email or whatever. And my in-town brother, he's a really physical hard worker, did a lot of the, you know, house emptying and this and that. So these roles kind of evolve for us. And it was, you know, we talked it through a lot, but that, you know, having a plan and getting some comfort level with each other on those kind of conversations before your parents go into crisis is a really smart move.
Yeah. So when the estate sale person, kind of gave us a proposal and we agreed to it, they said, okay, well go through the house and take out what personal items you have and, you know, you want. And Tracy and I each took a couple little things. Our other brother, had a bit more of an emotional attachment to things. And so he took more things than we did. But it's kind of like you have to kind of walk through that. And mm-hmm. then we gave the house over to the estate people. And they, I don't know what they do with everything. Oh, what they do is stuff that they aren't able to sell, they will donate to charity.
Mm-hmm.
Clothing that they can't sell, they give to like the Goodwill of the Salvation Army and that. And they delivered a broom clean house. And that was so nice to fly to St. Louis and walk into an empty house.
Yeah.
Because I thought, yeah. I'm going to have to come out here three times. I'm going to, you know, because I've seen my friends go through this and I've seen neighbors go through it. And I'm like, oh, so this was the way to go. We didn't make a lot of money, but I didn't, my goal was not to make the money. My goal was to empty the house.
Right. I think that was important. Everybody's like, oh, but that's worth a lot. Oh my gosh, just let it go. Because cleaning out a parent's house is physically and mentally grueling.
Yeah, and you—it's actually a lot of the stuff is just not—it's not Antiques Roadshow material.
Yeah, no, it's funny because Eric mentioned our brother who, you know, took a few more things. Yeah, he took a bunch of them and he put them here at my house in the basement. Stinker. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, he is, you know, he had some attachments to stuff that I, you know, I mean, when we walked through the house, you guys said, "What do you want?" I said, "I want nothing." You know? And then I took the minivan.
Yeah. So that would be good to talk about cars.
Yes. So, I mean, we thought it would be a pretty easy thing just for me to take the car. But because Medicare was paying for Dad's memory care treatment, that's an asset that Medicare counts everything against.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Medicaid. So, yeah. They calculate that in the formula.
So we were trying to determine the value of the minivan. And I basically just needed a car that I could haul stuff in, you know, because this is contractor garden forky stuff, you know. But I had to take it to a local shop and get them to estimate everything that was wrong with it and figure out the value of the car. And it ended up, while that was going on, Dad passed away. So Medicare was no longer involved, so I could just buy it from the estate. And that was pretty simple. But then when we found the title, we realized... Yeah. That the title was in Dad's name, but not Mom's name, and so she couldn't sign the title.
It was titled by both.
Oh, okay.
So it was a joint title. I could not just have Mom sign it, sign the back and sell it. So I had to retitle the van for just my mother and take all these the death certificate to the Department of Revenue and get the van retitled before. So, in a lot of states, there's a really nifty tool called transfer on death, and it's transfer on death for many things, but you can do it for a vehicle registration, and the car will pass immediately to the person named on the title, unless there is a surviving spouse and it's joint titled. But it's a really clean way, and you avoid probate.
Yeah.
So you name a beneficiary to inherit a vehicle right on your title. So my car has a title on death, so it would just immediately be belong to someone else.
Hey everyone, I'm wondering if you would consider becoming a monthly supporter of Garden Fork Radio and GardenFork.tv. We've made it really easy to do so. We've started a Patreon campaign. And you choose a dollar amount every month that you would like to contribute to Garden Fork. The suggested dollar amount is $3 a month. That's less than a dollar a show, a buck a show, as Rick calls it. It's about $36 a year. So that's like a magazine subscription, basically, is how I think about it. If you're interested, there's a link in the show notes here. If you're listening on an iPhone in the podcast app, just tap on the Garden Fork Radio logo of this episode. And it will show the show notes, and there's a link in there. Or go to patreon.com/gardenfork. That's patreon.com/gardenfork. There's also a link on every page of our website. If you consider that, that would be really cool. Appreciate that. You can also support Garden Fork by using our Amazon shopping link, which is on our website. You can also go to gardenfork.tv/Amazon. And that, if the technology is working, should take you to Amazon as well. All right. Thank you. Oh, you know, I actually want to go back to the sale of the house. Since both our parents were in care facilities, the house was empty. And there were various workers and us going in and out from day to day. But there wasn't someone there every day. And at a certain point, there was a water leak in the house, and no one knew about it for a number of days.
Yeah, that was a little rough.
And there was rental furniture in the house for the open house, the real estate open house that was going to happen. And I will spare you the long story of this, but if the house is going to be empty, turn off the water main in the basement. And there's a couple reasons for that. First of all, it's just in case there is a water leak. But also, we had to make an insurance claim on my parents' homeowner's policy, and it actually worked out all right. But in the policy, it said if the house is vacant more than X number of days and the water main is not turned off, we will not cover any damage.
Mm-hmm. So I did have to flip the house to a vacant policy.
Yep.
I didn't even know of such a thing until, of course, you know, we had our, we were completely in the thick of this crisis with the house. So it was a good point, Eric, when the furniture got damaged, and I'm all for staging. It's really, that place looked great.
Oh, it was amazing. Yes. Yeah, yes. Staging was worth the money. It was amazing.
Yes. But I mistakenly signed the contract on behalf of my mother in my own name. I have power of attorney, and I really learned from that experience that I need to sign everything in a certain, you put your name, and then DPOA stands for designated power of attorney, and then for, you know, your parents' name.
Right.
And that really protects you.
Because what happened was the rental staging company was quite upset, and they're like, you have to pay us all this money, you have to pay us right away. And I looked at the order, the work order, and Tracy had signed her name without the DPOA part. So yep. She was personally liable, technically,
yikes,
for this rental furniture if the insurance company didn't come through. You know, and it was a lot of money.
Yeah.
So the power of attorney is great, but when you sign anything, you have to do that DPOA part to make sure the people you're dealing with realize you're signing for this other person, not yourself personally.
Yeah, that was a little eye opener. That was a little crisis moment there. One of our crisis moments. So,
and then we, the house was very attractive. There were a bunch of people interested in it, but people know that it's an estate sale, and so they play a mental game. You know, they make an offer, and we accepted this offer, and they had their building inspector, you know, house inspector guy come, and they sent, was it like a 40-page document or something?
Oh, their inspector wrote an 82-page report on the house.
And then they tried to, you know, I think they just tried to play a little game with us because they knew it was the siblings wanting to just get rid of the house. And they tried to lowball us after our accepted offer. And they're like, we want a new roof. We want this brick pointing fixed. We want this fixed. We want this fixed. And we had already done a ton of work. We had waterproofed the basement. We had fixed the foundation. Mm. And we were burnt. And so we just went back to them and said, we're going to knock X amount off the price to pay for, I think, the roof. I was like, okay, it recently had hail damage. Fine. Mm-hmm. You know, you put the roof on. We'll just take that off the price. We're not putting a roof on for you. And they said, fine. And I think that's, you know, I guess they were trying to play hardball with us.
A good real estate agent will coach you through this. You know, it's really the agents are doing a lot of this. Sometimes it's a waiting game.
Yeah.
And our agent counseled us on how to turn that in the other direction. And it's hard not to panic, but don't panic. You know, do whatever you need to, yoga or prayer or dog walking and
meditation.
It pans out somehow or another. It was quite the ride, though. I mean, the things I didn't know about insurance beforehand is astounding.
Yeah. So, you know, when they come back and they lowball you, they're depending on the state you're in, there are, you know, they've already signed an offer or maybe a contract, and there's actually financial penalties if they don't act on the contract within X number of days. So you can wait till almost the end of that time period, like on the ninth day of a 10-day window, and then come back to them and say, this is what we'll do, take it or leave it. And they have, you know, 5 hours to decide, something like that. But our real estate agent counseled, because I didn't know any of that, and Tracy didn't, and the real estate agent said, here's how we'll do this. You know, we'll make a reasonable counteroffer. And and so you know, you have this 9 days of anxiety, but it worked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were really fortunate. And then we had to go to the closing, where I had to have all the original power of attorney forms. And then your bank is going to get involved. So then I learned about this other, the importance of who's on what bank account, the address of the bank account. And then I learned of another aspect of it, which is like title on death is payable on death. And it's a way for somebody to inherit a bank account as soon as you pass away. So like you can have your car ready to go. You can have your bank accounts ready to go as well. That's called payable on death. And most banks will do that. So for mine, I mean, it passed from my dad right to my mom because they had a joint account. But now I've set mom up to have payable on death to, you know, one of the three of us, so that if something happens to her, it's all in place already. So that's a good thing to explore. And then when, you know, you sell a house on behalf of someone else, you've got to have the originals of your power of attorney, and it has to be the business power of attorney, not the medical power of attorney.
Right, the financial or business part, yeah.
And you will sign all those closing papers, you know, the whole designated power of attorney for blah, blah, blah. So yeah.
It ended up that the people that bought the house are super nice people.
Yeah, I think they're pretty excited.
And they're very excited about the house, and that's great because it's perfect for them because it's a mid-century ranch.
Yeah.
And they're really into that. And it is a really nice house. It just had a lot of baggage for us.
Yes, quite a bit.
I think we gave them a really nice, we fixed a bunch of stuff in it, you know, and we made it really nice. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, our cousin is moving into his parents' home. It had a paid off mortgage. And I guess between him and his other siblings had a conversation, and I mean, they kept the house and now he's going to move there to retire in it. So there's a lot of options out there. You just, again, talk in advance if you can.
That's the hardest part. And the realtor also commented to us that she sent us all a very nice note and said how great the three of us got along. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? She goes, this could be a nightmare for siblings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paraphrasing. Yeah, I know
people have fallen apart. They just don't talk anymore after things. And we got a little heated, but I think since we were all on the same page at the beginning point last year, that it did help. Because, you know, you're going to hit crisis mode, and that's not the time to be texting your brother really ticked off about some comment he made, or that he's not doing his weight, or just, yeah, you don't want to do that on text when you're ticked off about
right,
a parental
yeah. Can't
crisis.
You just go over to the house and do this thing?
Oh, yeah, I know, okay.
And the reason was honest, I have to take my kid to school, you know, but, you know, when you're in the throes of it and then some utility guy showing up at the house and no one can get there.
Oh, goodness, yes. Yeah.
And I'm 1,000 miles away, so.
Yes, well, you kept in touch with things, so that was helpful.
So, also, you know, pay attention to what it says on your parents' insurance policy. I read the policy 6 times, and I learned, it was kind of funny, some of the things you can tell the insurance company has had to deal with before. Like one of the sentences says, this policy does not cover the storage of nuclear fissile material on the premises or aircraft in pieces that are being assembled on the premises.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, we don't have an airplane in the basement. I don't have any nuclear material either.
Good. Well, you never know with dad, you know, what he could have had.
Yes. So.
He was very fond of storing Freon for a while, from what I remember as a child. Yeah. So
it's going to be worth something one day.
Yes, we need that for next summer. Okay, thanks, Dad.
So what were the couple other things? You had a whole list there, Trace, and I kind of went off track.
I do. Bank accounts. So when one of your parents passes away, keep a bank account open. It can be a joint account or whatever, in the name of your deceased parent. I was recommended 12 to 14 months. Now, I stupidly have taken dad off of everything, so I'm going to have the fun time of when we do taxes of trying to figure out how to make all this happen. And I have a tax guy, thank goodness, who will help me. But you can't deposit checks to a deceased person. The bank's going to go, yeah, it's not too cool. Even I had some checks that were in both names, both parents, and I had to go back and ask for a check just in mom's name because, you know, they will not take a check with dad's name on it. Some banks are different. I try to keep a close relationship with mom's bank. There's a branch near me, and so that hopefully they'll wiggle or they'll try to get things through for me when I get in a jam, which, you know, is going to happen. And that's actually it's a tiny side note, but you need to make this convenient for you. So if you need to move your parents' bank to has a branch near your house, I would do that. I also, part of the reason why we picked the facility that mom is in is she's between my in-town brother and I. She's about 15 minutes from each of us. There's nicer places, there's different places, but they're 45 minutes away. And it, you know, I just needed to sort of be realistic and say, okay, if you want to see us, you need to be close to us. So,
but the place she's in is really nice.
Oh, yes. And it's smallish.
Yeah, it's not a lot of people. And her apartment, I'd love to have that size apartment. I could have like that and a laptop and nothing else.
Yeah, I hope she watches Tiny Houses on HGTV so that, you know, she gets the hint that people like a small space. So she's filling it up, but you know what? I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Yeah, once you let go of some of the control, it really helps.
Yeah. So what's next?
Addresses. It was a little odd, but when Dad passed, I changed his mailing address to my house. So you're getting mail for someone who's deceased, but they get a lot of mail, you know, and it's just the funniest part was, of course, when somebody called me and asked me for his address. I said, he doesn't have one right now, but it helped. And actually, I would say 90% of my mother's mail is here as well. And that kind of helped the personal relationship, too. I know my mailman, we still have, you know, boxes, and the guy drives up every day and leaves milk bones. And I just said, you know, I use my mail for my parents comes here too. And he's like, oh, a lot of people do that. And it just gave him a heads up as to, you know, I didn't have a bunch of people sleeping in my basement. It was just for my parents. And that helps with everything because as taxes come due, I need Social Security and the IRS and every bank around to know that everything for my dad comes to this address. So you're going to find all sorts of little details that you didn't think of, you know, like the benefit statements of retirement accounts, anything for health care, have it. Or if you can do it electronic, do that. So that's my advice on addresses is to unfortunately switch it to your own house, which gets, you know, can get confusing for the mailman, but just go talk to him and they'll figure it out.
All right.
Yeah. And then taxes are coming and I don't know, maybe we can talk after that. Cause I don't know what to expect.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know about taxes. I just give all my stuff to the accountant and I write him a check.
Yeah, I have same guy was doing mom and dad's taxes for about 4 years now. So I think I'm going to call him in advance and say, hey, you know, dad passed, heads up here. What do I need to start collecting, you know, as opposed to the generic list of documents to collect for people.
I wonder if the guy who helped with the Medicare consulting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, boy, he was. He's like, here's your list and you have to run out and do it. Oh, and hey, if you have a parent in either skilled nursing, full-skill nursing home, or assisted living, insure their jewelry. So that was yet another little adventure of having to take her jewelry from her, get it appraised and cleaned, and then get it insured at her address where she's, of course, in assisted living.
Yeah, she has to have a little property. It's almost like a rental property insurance policy.
Yep, we have renter's insurance, and you know, not that old people aren't sweet and nice, but you know what? Sometimes they get a little forgetful, and they totter in and out of each other's apartments, and who knows what could happen to a set of pearls or a ring or something. So I've heard it happen. So we're fortunate we haven't had anything, but I've got her pretty well covered now.
Cool. Well, that's a half hour of action-packed information.
Ooh, yeah. The bottom line is, you know, talk to your siblings and talk to your parents before the crisis hits.
Because our parents were like, oh, we're fine. Don't worry about us. And we were like, and we realized that we should have been worried a lot earlier.
Yeah, they lied like crazy. So, and old people do that.
Yeah, we took our pills.
Yeah, I plan to lie a lot when I get older, but, you know. But we do have an aunt, and she has already, she sold her own house. She emptied her own house. She gave her son power of attorney. She chose where she wanted to be. She knows probably in a year or two she's going to have to move to the next level of care. I mean, so there are other routes than the crisis route.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had kind of mid-level crisis. I've heard some horror stories, so.
Yes. So hopefully our experience can help anybody else who's out there and listens.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can send me an email. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. Just radio@gardenfork.tv. And after we do the taxes, maybe Trace can come back on and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, how fun the IRS is with when people pass away. Oh, you know what? And we should talk about probate, but that's I got to avoid it. So maybe we should find someone else to talk about probate.
Oh, is that when the will goes into probate?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Me either, because we didn't have any money, so it was okay.
So. That was the bonus of having parents that weren't millionaires.
Right. There's no stocks. It was, yeah. So... yeah, that might be a topic. We'll find someone else to help us out and give a few tips for that maybe someday.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for taking the time, Trace.
Oh, you're welcome. You guys make a great day, and stay warm if you're covered with snow.
Yeah. Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.